can hear it.
Judy, no!
I'll put the story in the stone.
Judy!
Put your name in the air.
Hello, everyone. It is us, the TARDIS Blend guys, back again this week to review the latest edition of Doctor Who. My name is Greg Davies.
My name is Tom Cheridar, second class.
You're going to have to explain, because you mentioned that line to me. I think I missed it somewhere
you
in the show.
It.
I think I did. What is that line from? What line? I watched it twice, too, so I must have missed it.
You definitely missed it. Yeah. It's when he's... He's talking about, you know, having served in, you know, the military.
Oh, yes,
in the
yes.
Area.
Oh, yes, that's right. I love that little line where he's...
And Nardole is like, wait, you're a second-class officer? Like, what what did you do? And I do. I want to know that story.
Oh, there's going to be a lot of stories about the Doctor we'll never hear about, you know, like the...
Sounds like an audio play.
Yeah, this Moffat's series run with Doctor Who, there's been a lot of name drops. Like, if you listen carefully, that's me on the triangle in this recording, or things like that. And I love that about his approach to Doctor Who. But episode 10, god damn it, it just feels like we've run through this season too quickly. Quicker than usual.
Like
it's flown by. But this episode, Tom, let me drop some trivia on you first before we get into our ratings. I noticed it had a very classic Doctor Who feel, and this was very deliberately so, because it was written by Rona Monroe,
mm-hmm.
Who wrote this episode. She had originally written for classic Doctor Who.
Now, I read somewhere that makes her the first... writer that has written for both the classic and new series.
I think you're correct. I know that there was a director that did one for New Who as well as classic Doctor Who, but I think this is the first writer we've had from classic Doctor Who. Her last effort was Survival, featuring the Sylvester McCoy Doctor in 1999, which was actually the final story to be broadcast for classic Doctor Who. It was the final adventure before they axed it. So she had a...
like a homecoming.
Yeah, it's kind of like a closing component to classic Doctor Who, and now she's contributing to a closing component of the Stephen Moffat era of Doctor Who, which is really nice. And she's Scottish, which is, you know, delightful. It fits into the scene of the episode.
She definitely showed some of her love in this episode.
Yeah, yeah. I was pretty impressed with this episode. I do have a... you know, a couple of little criticisms, which we'll get into a little later, but my rating is going to be a solid 4 out of 5.
All right. I really like this one. And, you know, while last episode it wasn't really my cup of tea, and, you know, I haven't got around to watching the recommendations from last week.
The Peladon episodes, yeah.
I just realized that they are nowhere easily available online. So I'm going to have to buy them from iTunes.
Yeah.
This episode, it felt like it's just a really solid standard episode. So it gets a 3 out of 5.
All right, well, a 7 out of 5 is not anything to sneeze at. Like we mentioned last week, which we gave the last episode 7 out of 10. That's a good rating. It means it's a good episode. And, you know, that's fairly good for Doctor Who. I was actually kind of struck with how classic Doctor Who it really felt all the way through. Like, you know, that you had these groups that had finally united together at the end to face the monster, if you will. You know, there was a very classic Who vibe with it, which, you know, it was very common during Sylvester McCoy's era, Tom Baker's era, even John Pertwee. You know, you would have you know, these episodes where you'd have a big bad that was a monster of some kind that really you had no way to communicate with
intelligently. A doorway to the end of the world.
Yes, correct. Indeed. You know, or gateway, if you will. Gateway was the word used in the episode. The main cast in this episode were absolutely brilliant, but I was also very impressed with the supporting cast, especially Brian Vernal, who played the remaining commander of the Romans, who is most well known for his role in Star Wars The Force Awakens in hunting down Han Solo. Tell that to Kanja Club.
Han Solo, you're a dead man.
Well, Atik, what's the problem?
The problem is we loaned you 50,000 for this job.
Can you see them?
No.
I heard you also borrowed 50,000 from Kanja Club.
You know you can't trust those little freaks. How long have we known each other?
They are blasters. A lot of them.
Not long. We want our money back now.
You think hunting Rathgars is cheap? I spent that money.
Kanja Club wants their investment back too.
I never made a deal with Kanja Club.
Tell that to Kanja Club.
Tasu Leech. Good to see you.
That BB unit, First Order is looking for one just like it. And two fugitives.
You have to move again. Stay in the sunlight. It burns off the slime.
Problem.
Are you hungry? Come on, you have to eat.
How much food have we got left?
Enough.
Really?
Shut up, Cornelius. Go on, eat it. It's 2 days you haven't had anything.
I've never been lost this long. I need to find him.
Who?
The doctor, my friend. I don't know what I'm gonna do if I can't find him.
Well, we'll look after you.
I'm gonna have to find my way home somehow.
This is the safest place to be. The beast is still out there.
Tell that to Kanja Club. He's the guy that said that line, and he dropped his Scottish accent for this episode so that he could match the English accent because they were really speaking Latin at the time. We had a nice little description about, a nice little piece of detective work by Bill working out how the TARDIS translates languages.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, which was nice.
I like that they stop and, you know, occasionally reiterate stuff like that.
Right, and it feels like Moffat's deliberately spread out the whole, what about this doctor? What's regeneration, doctor? How can they understand what I'm saying, doctor? Blah, blah, blah.
It's mentioned regeneration quite a bit.
Yeah, I think we're going to have something going on. There's a couple of bits and pieces that I'm going to get to in terms of where Moffat's actually taking us, but we'll get to that when we get to the next time trailer discussion. I thought the bit with Missy at the end was pretty cool, very emotional. You know, but you never, what was it the doctor said, but you never learn to hear the music, Missy. And her expression after that reminded me of the drums, the sound of drums.
You know, I was going to say, the music in this episode, Greg, was phenomenal. And Nardole's comment that it was worse than jazz.
Yeah, I like that.
That might have been my favorite line.
Yeah, I would bet you $5 that he improvised that line.
Sounds like they have quite a few riffs.
There was a nice little interview last week on the fan show about Empress of Mars. They had Mark Gatiss and Matt Lucas there being interviewed, and it was a lot of fun. It's a really good piece. You guys should go and check it out. In which Lucas was explaining that his job really in entertainment is to be able to do improv, but when you have something that's solidly written like Doctor Who, you can't really throw in improv in the first couple of takes. You need to do the what's written on the page out of respect to the people who've done the rehearsals. And, you know, because this isn't a comedy show we're looking at. Sure, he's comic relief, but he is, you know, he has to read the lines. And he was explaining that after a couple of goes, after a couple of takes, that's when he starts throwing in little improv pieces, little lines here and there, nothing over the top, but something to give the directors something to work with if they wanted a little element of his improv added in there. And so that was a nice little explanation because, you know, I remember listening to the commentary tracks on classic Doctor Who, the whole thing about improv on the set in classic Doctor Who was verboten. It was just not allowed to happen, not allowed at all. They had their biggest challenge with Tom Baker, who, as you know, Tom, is the king of improv, really, when it comes acting.
He must, like, I think about, like, really, like, anal showrunners who were like, no, you delivered exactly like this, and what they would think of Tom Baker.
Well, now, I mean, we need to remember as well that the early classic Doctor Who era was strongly based upon theatre. And you can notice that very strongly in the first Doctor and second Doctor era. But a lot of those hangovers of keeping to the exact lines that the script writers had put into the plot was something that was grandfathered in from that old theatrical perspective when they went into television. And so, you know, now it's still kind of there, but Matt Lucas did a really good job of explaining how he's able to integrate a little bit of his improv into the modern show, which I thought was very nice. It's a great little bit for classic fans. What'd you think of the popcorn scene?
Brilliant.
Yeah. Very classic Who, I thought. Were there any other bits and pieces that stood out to you? Because I've got a lot of stuff here.
You know, I really appreciated that they occasionally stop and give it that kind of old school feel. Where they, you know, they throw in a little bit of history at you. You know, and again, just a really strong performance by Bill to differentiate herself from, you know, our usual fare of companions who usually need to incubate a couple seasons before they get as bold as she is.
Mm.
So, yeah, more or less. But I'm more interested to hear what you have to say.
Speaking of the history aspect of it, the mention of sexuality in the cave when Bill is revealing to Lucius, who, as we mentioned before, was played by Brian Vernal. It was a great scene, but it actually also prompted me to do a little bit of research. And the reason I did this was because I was looking at reactions from fans online and they were like, oh yeah, right, as if the ancient Romans were politically correct. I was like, well, there were a lot of other civilizations before, you know, the Victorian prude era of history. So I went and had a look into the history of homosexuality in ancient Rome, and it's a little bit interesting. I'm going to just read these couple of paragraphs from the wiki page so that everyone's on the same page, if you will. Homosexuality in ancient Rome often differs markedly from the contemporary West. Latin lacks words that would precisely translate homosexual and heterosexual. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
The primary dichotomy of ancient Roman sexuality was active/dominant/masculine and passive/submissive/feminine. Roman society was patriarchal, and the freeborn male citizen possessed political liberty and the right to rule both himself and his household. Virtue, or virtus, was seen as an active quality through which a man defined himself. The conquest mentality and cult of virility shaped same-sex relations. Roman men were free to enjoy sex with other males without a perceived loss of masculinity or social status as long as they took the dominant or penetrative role. So there you go. This is accurate.
Yeah. I mean, that much I knew.
Yeah. But I'm just responding to a lot of the reactions I saw online. Oh, they're trying to make ancient Rome politically correct, and that's not actually the case. In fact,
not at all.
Yeah, if you look further into it, there's a lot of
history books. Yeah,
yeah. There was a lot of twink attraction, if you will, in ancient Rome. You had to be a younger person. If you were a male initiating a homosexual experience with another male, then if you were the dominant person, the other person had to be younger than you, which was why teenagers and boys were often used in, it's usually more along the lines of pederasty more than anything, rather than pedophilia or anything like that. But the idea was that in the society, it was acceptable, it was welcomed, and it was just a part of the society at the time. And it was nice to have that reflected there. It was a good comparison between our modern culture now and the embracing that we're seeing of multiple sexual orientations around the world, you know, to what the ancient Romans thought of it. And that was a nice little bit.
We're all in this together. You're going to be fine. Marcus was hurt like you, and the sunlight healed him in the end.
I am feeling better.
Good.
Yeah, don't worry, Bill. Lucius will look after you.
Shut up, Cornelius.
Lucius, right, yeah, listen, there's, something I should explain.
What?
This is probably just a really difficult idea. I don't like men that way.
What, not ever?
Nah, not ever. Only women.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I got it. You like Vitus, then?
What?
He only likes men.
Some men. Better looking men than you, Lucius.
I don't think it's narrow-minded. I think it's fine. You know what you like.
And you like both?
I'm just ordinary. You know, like men and women.
Well, isn't this all very modern?
Hey, not everyone has to be modern. I think it's really sweet that you're so restricted.
Cheers.
We can be friends, though. Yeah, it did save your life. That means we're friends forever.
Yeah, but I can deal with that.
Why is it going dark?
Sunset.
Nah, it's the beast. It's circling us. It's looking for a way in.
The other thing that I thought was very interesting in this episode, Tom, and I'm not sure if you caught on this, there was a line from the Picts in this episode where they said something along the lines of the Romans. They said, they call it empire. I thought this line was pretty telling because if we've been looking at carefully at this season, there's actually been quite a lot of anti-imperialism and anti-colonialism in this season from, you know, Victorian England with Queen and country and slavery, or even Trump's America. There's been a lot of undercurrent focusing on this kind of governing dominance this season. And I wonder if that's just an ongoing subtext that has been deliberately inserted into the season, or whether it's something in the subconscious of the writers that's bubbling under the surface that reflects their reaction to the political scene at the moment. I mean, let's face it, we've had some upheavals over the last couple of years. Brexit was unexpected. Trump's election was unexpected. And those things have thrown the world on its head, basically, for a lot of people. It's very hard for them to deal and comprehend with this political change that they're going through. And I'm wondering whether that's a reflection of that subconsciously or whether it's deliberate. The last of the good stuff that I wanted to mention was, I think Carr, the leader of the Picts, I thought she was very underplayed in the direction and editing of the film. I mean, her scenes were great, emotional, awesome, amazing, and a fantastic role model for young girls watching the show. It's hard being a badass hero and making sacrifices, and the Doctor helped her in fulfilling that destiny. I thought it was important, almost similar to Maisie Williams in her first Doctor Who episode. And I think we need a little bit more frequency of characters like this in the future on Doctor Who. On that point, Rebecca Benson, who plays Carr in the show, was on this week's fan show episode, and she had a lot of interesting things to say about the episode. And look, if you have not checked out an episode of this yet, you really should. I mean, it's at YouTube. It's the official Doctor Who YouTube channel. It's the fan show. They also call it the after show. And the host, Crystal D., I'm in love with this girl. She is amazing. She's a great host. She's balancing a lot on her plate by doing this job, because they prepared this show on YouTube so that it's viewable by both adults and children. So there's she's doing a fantastic job, and she's not talking down to the audience like it was a kid's show or anything like that. She's just fantastic. She's a great interviewer. She keeps your attention on the program. they did a great job at casting her for this particular fan show, and you all should go and check it out. It's very, very good. Now, my criticism, and it's really just, this is me being, you know, nitpicky, if you will. As good as Pearl Mackey was in this episode as Bill, I kept getting the feeling that the concept of this story was originally designed for an Amy Pond adventure with the Doctor.
I did kind of feel like that.
Yeah. She's the one who's a huge fan of the Romans in the Britons, whereas Bill's more of a sci-fi slash pop culture guru, interested more in science than history. So it felt like a bit of a mismatch for her character, and that kind of took me out of the episode, and that's why I had to drop it a point. It just felt like it was... It was a template that had been sketched out for an Amy Pond adventure, and they brought it back for this episode for Rona to fill out with her writing skills. But it really did feel more like a Amy Pond-centric adventure than it did Bill Potts to me. So there we go. That's what I thought of the episode. We give it a 7 out of 10. I think it was pretty good, very enjoyable, fun episode. Definitely not groundbreaking in sense of, you know, one of the rating factors that we have always tried to apply to these episodes, Tom, is whether this episode is as good as Blink or The Day of the Doctor or the Doctor's Wife, you know, one of those, or Genesis of the Daleks, one of those episodes that you can point to new fans and say, you want to get into Doctor Who? You want to try and check it out? Look at this episode. I can't point to this episode as one of those ones. This is definitely one for the fans. They really enjoyed it by the sounds of it. But it's not a good first episode for people wanting to discover Doctor Who, I think.
Yeah.
That said, let's jump to the Next Time trailer. Did you see it?
I did see it. Oh, man.
Okay, so what are your thoughts on it? I'm really interested in hearing
your reactions. I don't know. I feel like, what did we watch? Did we watch the next episode? Did we watch a collection of everything that's happening to the end of the season. I really don't know.
Yeah, it could be that too. And we're also, I mean, we need to remember as well that this season's Next Time trailers have been very good. They've been very misleading in some places where you think you get an idea of what the plot is and it turns out to be a completely different surprise. And so that's been good. They've been very good with that this season. I can't help but feel that we got a good glimpse of the plot. And I have a feeling that Stephen Moffat is going to go out on a bang and he is going to redeem the Master. That's what I'm thinking.
That would be awesome. You know what else I would think it's funny is if they picked him up right before his last adventure with David Tennant.
Yeah.
Well, like the moment before, you know,
when I'm not talking about John Sim as the Master. I'm talking about Michelle Gomez as the Master. My prediction is Missy is the final Master. She redeems herself. This is a test by the Doctor. And I think he's testing her to try and redeem the Master, to step out of, you know, the dark side, if you will. And I had a thought, and I'm not saying that I want this to happen, nor should it happen, but one of the thoughts that I had, wouldn't it be interesting after all these years if we find out that the Master is actually the Doctor, that Missy, the final incarnation of the Doctor, regenerates into the First Doctor? I mean, sorry, the final incarnation of the Master regenerates into the First Doctor. I mean, that's probably not going to happen, but it was a thought I had. And maybe that's why Peter Capaldi Doctor is working so hard to redeem Missy, because his own existence depends upon it.
You think that's it? I don't know.
I don't know. That was just a thought. I'm not laying it down as a dead set prediction, but it was just a random thought I had when I saw that when I saw that trailer, because there's been efforts in the past to try and make them brothers, siblings. And that never really came around. But it could well be that Moffat may actually Moffuck us again this time, because we have had rumors that David Bradley is going to reprise the role as the First Doctor. Well, rather, he played William Hartnell, but, you know, he may come back as the First Doctor, you know, for real.
That would be amazing.
It would. It would be pretty nice. And that would be, you know, explain a lot about the relationship between the Doctor and the Master, because the Doctor's worst enemy is his himself. It speaks volumes to me, but I don't know whether that's where Moffat is going. But
I think we'll just let it happen.
I do feel that he is pushing for the redemption of the Master, and that would be nice to see. So, you know, that would open up the way to have a new Moriarty style villain, a new, do you remember, like, here's this. Do you remember back in the 90s, like in the early 90s, up until that point, Spider-Man's biggest arch nemesis was the Green Goblin. And the writers at Marvel knew something needed to be changed. So after the Secret War stuff, out from that comes Venom. Voila, you have a new arch nemesis for Spider-Man. And I feel that's the kind of direction that they're going to go in. I think he's going to free up Chris Chibnall to create a new arch nemesis for the Doctor, which may be quite good and very entertaining. The other thing I thought is that this test is not actually a test. It's a real deal, and Missy has to face herself. In other words, she has to face the John Sim Master to pass the test.
That'd be really interesting. See, I was thinking more along the lines of, like, we're not seeing Missy in sequential order.
That could be.
We're seeing a much earlier version of the Master, perhaps. Or maybe a much later version.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, because we never saw John Sim regenerate into Missy. We may see that in this season. Yeah. That would be lovely to see. And that may be coming up in the next couple of episodes. Who knows? I mean, it feels to me that this is... Because Moffat usually drags out his overarching plot through a season. And this time it felt like the Vault was the overarching plot. And that kind of got cracked open about halfway through the season. I think this is all about the Master and the Doctor's relationship with her and him, if you will. And I think that's where we're going.
I pick a scenario, we drop her down into it, and we see how she does.
Hello. I am that mysterious adventurer in all of time and space, and these are my disposables.
Just promise you won't get me killed. I said this was a bad idea.
A 400-mile ship reversing away from the gravitational pull of a black hole.
So sorry, but you're the reason that they're coming.
What are they?
A Vondasian Cyberman.
Either way, I'm really excited to see what Moffat pulls out of his hat. I mean, this is really going to be very interesting.
We are at the end. We kick off. The next two episodes is a two-parter season ender. And, yeah, we're going to get the Cybermen. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that we're going to get fireworks. We just don't know what kind of fireworks.
It's going to be very interesting. I'm pumped. I'm really glad. I mean, we're going to have Missy in a Doctor role. We're going to have the return of John Sim as the Master. The Mondas Cybermen are going to be making an appearance somewhere along the line. Peter Capaldi's finale as the Doctor, if you will, because we've already been told that his death scene is in this season. The final scene of the final finale from Stephen Moffat as he steps out and he wraps up his thing with the Christmas special at the end of the year. And, you know, with any luck, we're going to have a new Doctor revealed to us within a couple of weeks. It's exciting. And you know what? Remember how I was talking at the beginning of the season? They've really kept that whole new Doctor thing a huge secret. Like, if it was done, you know, remember when Matt Smith was announced? It was months in advance. Same with Peter Capaldi. We've got a new Doctor coming up, and no one except Stephen Moffat and Russell T. Davies have a clue who it is. So they've got some tight security going on right now.
I think that we're just going to see a very different Doctor, you know?
Mm.
Well, it was easy to predict under Capaldi, or rather maybe not predict, but get some kind of, you know, nuts and bolts of where their mind's at,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't think we have any idea with Chibnall.
Well, there's one.
I just know it can't be like another version of David Tennant and Matt Smith and Capaldi. It's got to be something new.
There is a one fan theory that there's a few fan theories about Bill Potts, actually, in that some fans believe that she is actually the next Doctor, and she's been you know, she's got the fob watch somewhere. She's turned herself into a human and gone into hiding. And there's some other people say that her mother is the Doctor, the new Doctor, and that makes Bill Potts his daughter. Or his or her daughter. So it's going to be really interesting to see where they go. I'm pretty sure they're going to pick a woman this time around to be the Doctor. You know, we've been conditioned into accepting it over the last few years. And remember, Stephen Moffat was the one that first ever proposed a female regeneration in Doctor Who in his the Fatal Curse of Death, or what, that comedy version of Doctor Who he did with Rowan Atkinson, where they had all the regenerations at the end, and the final regeneration was into a woman. And he was the first to propose that, and I wouldn't be surprised if he puts his foot down and says, no, it needs to happen at the end of my tenure.
I hope he does it, just simply because, well, just like you said, it needs to happen. But also because, you know, that would really give us, you know, a new set of stories and standards that we really couldn't rely on. We would really have to go back to the start,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know?
I kind of felt the same way about Peter Capaldi, though, when he stepped in, because he was the first Doctor to step in after our lovely Doctor had burned through all of his regenerations. And so it kind of felt like a do-over, like a new start to the Doctor. I felt like he mirrored the first Doctor, if you will. And so I think what we're going to have, my prediction is it's going to be a younger person, and the Doctor will be female. And, I mean, if I was a betting man, I'd put my money down on Hayley Atwell, because that's been the name that's been thrown around fan circles for years now. But who knows where they're going with this. It's very interesting. Classic Doctor Who recommendation for this episode. I'm going to have to recommend Rona Munro's last effort with Classic Doctor Who, which was Survival. It was the closing episode of Classic Doctor Who, And did you have any recommendations, Tom?
No, actually, I was just going to say there are three of those. So I was going to say, check out Survival Part 2 and 3.
Well, Transmet Trev is back. He's actually posted two comments for us, one last week on our double feature episode that we did, as well as a comment a few hours ago after he got a chance to see the episode that we've just reviewed. So Transmet Trev says in his first comment, "Nice one, guys. Tom, it is great to hear you're back on form and back on solids." Because you were sick, remember?
Sir.
Yeah. And he says... Good. He says that the last episode we did with the two double feet with two episodes, one of your best reviews to date, by the way. And he says, yes, you are so right. Stephen Moffat has continued to expand the massive leap forward on sexual orientation attitudes within the show. But we've got to give Mr. T. Davies a massive mention, though. His matter-of-fact attitude towards sexuality hails him, in my eyes, as one of the pioneers in recent TV broadcasting. Now kids can grow up feeling much easier about themselves and their own sexual persuasion. Something that never happened back in the black and white days. Give him and Captain Jack medals as big as frying pans for helping change people's Victorian attitudes towards sex. I'm sure if it hadn't been for the progressive attitudes from these guys, same-sex marriages would never have become a reality. Do you agree or not? I think I'm in partial agreement, because It's through entertainment in which we learn new values and evolving ethics throughout time and history. And one of the ways that is done is through plots in entertainment. And I would say that Doctor Who has been a huge contributor to more acceptable attitudes towards people of different sexual orientations or gender identities and so on and so forth. So I'm in agreement with Trev there.
Yes.
Yeah. So he goes, so big up for the boys. Anyway, back to the plot. I think we haven't seen the last of the Monk alternative reality arc. Are there two realities still happening? One where the Master still operates and the other where Missy resides? He says his brain hurts. Stephen Moffat, you've done it again with these damn curveballs. So I'm going to move on to his other comment. He says, rant number two, just a quickie this week. 3 out of 5 for me. He matches your rating, Tom. All I wanted to say was a massive thank you to Stephen Moffat for clarifying to the world that blackbirds and seagulls talk with Scottish accents. I experienced this phenomenon a couple of months ago, 5 a.m. Sunday, sun coming up, sitting on the patio. All the conversation in the trees was Scottish. See you, you wee bastard. Mine, 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 came from the wheelie bin, which is another word for dumpster in Scotland. I tell you, it is true. I put it down to too much bubbles and vapors and realized it had been a long night.
He's going to love this episode.
He's talking
to the crows.
Yeah, yeah. The crows played a big role in it. It was very, very important and very enjoyable. So thank you, Trev. And if you're listening to the podcast, go over to geeksofdoom.com, find the latest post of the TARDIS blend, and make a comment and let us know what you thought about our reactions. Or even if you want to make a correction, maybe we're wrong about something. Or, hey, we might have annoyed you. So tell us what annoyed you. Or even just tell us what you thought of this latest episode of Doctor Who, because we will most certainly read your comment right here on the podcast. That's all I got, Tom. That's all I've got on my list of stuff for Doctor Who and TARDIS.
That's all I got, too.
A long wait this week for the beginning of the finale of Doctor Who. I'm pumped. It's been such a good season so far. And I really hope that Stephen Moffat goes out with an absolute bang, because really, even if he is doing the Christmas special, he is most certainly working for this season to make it his main finale, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he just is. The Christmas special is just going to be a fun romp. So we'll see. All right, Tom, well, I'll catch you next week.
Let's do it.
All right, and we'll catch you all next week right here at geeksofdoom.com, where you can check out the TARDIS blend and other podcasts here at the Geeks of Doom Network. And we will catch you next week for the beginning of the end of Series 10 right here at geeksofdoom.com. See ya.